Today is the 26th of August, 2019. It is, I don't have a Hebrew date in front of me.
25th of Av.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Okay, the 25th of Av, Rosh Chodesh Elul is coming. And we left off when the last previous month ended at Halacha Day of Perek Lamed Aleph. It's chapter 31 in Bamidbar, in the Book of Numbers. We have a little bit left in the Book of Numbers. Hopefully we'll be able to finish Bamidbar by Rosh Hashanah. I guess that would be the hope. And then pick up from Devarim after that. So the Perek Lamed Aleph discusses the battle with the Midianites. And even and the law and talks about that when you go and conquer, these are the rules of what about the kelim that you're going to conquer. You're going to conquer and get spoils, and now you have those spoils. So okay, so you can use them, but aren't they not kosher? Are the vessels not kosher? So the first in Pasuk Chaf Beis, it says first in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, an interesting point is that it says Zosku Kasator, that this is a chok. What is the, and not just a chok, this is like the chok. Right, the other time that this language of Zosku Kasator is used is by the paraduma, right, by the red cow. So we are
sorry,
a chok means a law that we don't necessarily know the reasons for.
Right.
So like a dictate. So the laws of the red cow is a dictate. We don't really understand the reasons. And there, everybody wants to talk about how we don't understand the reason why, and all these kinds of things. Here, no one seems to talk about that here. But it says Zosku Kasatora in reference to the laws of koshering vessels. Right, that there's non-kosher food that gets stuck into the walls of the non-kosher vessels, even though it looks very clean from the outside, it's not clean on the inside. Therefore, yeah, there's a methodology in order to kosher them. So there, so even though we in halach we sort of make it out to be a logical type of thing. Things that got in there by way of a liquid medium, you can get out of there by using a liquid medium. If it was used directly by fire, you have to get rid of it directly by fire. So it's all logical. However, you still have the rules of Zosku Kasatora present. So even though it might not correspond specifically to the laws of physics as we currently know it, that's okay. Halacha is not necessarily operating the same way that physics is operating. So these psukim here, you could read it as only discussing those laws of kashering kelim. However, there is another halacha, and that's found in, learned out from something in Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23. It says, Kol davar sheyavo be'ish tavir be'ish v'tahir. Anything that came through fire, you'll take through fire again, you'll tahir, you'll be tahir it, you'll purify it. Ach b'mei nida yischata. Right? And those are all of a sudden, throws in these words here. Ach b'mei nida yischata. What does that mean? That it has to be purified with the water of sprinkling. Anything that was not brought through fire has to be put into water. It could be put into water and be kashered that way. But what are those words? Ach b'meinida yischata. What is that talking about? What is that referring to? So Rashi here suggests. Where is Rashi? There it is. Rashi says v'pshiti chitui zelatara mitumas ames. What this is talking about is that these kelim are probably tame. And therefore, they required a tara process. They were tummy because of tumas mace. They came in contact with the dead, or you came in contact with the dead, and you and therefore you caused these pots to become tummy. So, all right. So you gotta, in order for them to be tower again, you have to use b'mei nida. You have to use the. A paraduma, the sprinkling on it, in order for it to remove from its tumah. And then Rashi continues on and says, "Rabbi Hussein Darshim Mikam, Rabbi Hussein to figure out from here, Shachlach Shirin Mina Isser Hitin Tvila Leklimatechos, that even to be machsherit from Isser, you still require Tvila for these metal kalim. Umeinida Haksuvim Kan Darshim, when it says Meinida, which is usually referred to as the water that is sprinkled that contains the ashes of the red cow, here it just talks about a mikvah. Here it's talking about a mikvah, a ritual bath, where a nida could go into. Just as a woman, in order to be purified after her period, would then, in order to be permitted back to her husband, goes to the mikvah. So too here, in order for these kalim to be permissible to use, they have to go into the mikvah. That's where Rashi concludes. So this is very confusing, and part of it is people often find this confusing. Part of it is because they're bunched together in the same sukkim. You know, if one goes and purchases a non-kosher vessel on eBay, right? That a used non-kosher vessel that's metal, right? So there's two from a non-Jew. So there's two things that need to happen in order for the person to use it, in order for a person to be permitted to use it themselves. Number one is what we refer to as kashering, and the second thing is we refer to as toveling, bringing something to the mikvah. The kashering gets rid of the non-kosher stuff in it. That's the purging. Either put it in boiling water, or you have to burn it out. Things like that. That's kashering. And then the second thing is you have to make the kli Jewish, so to speak, right? And that's done by bringing it to the mikvah. What?
That's the mikvah.
Correct. Okay. Correct. So there is a dispute here. So there is the Torah Tamimi here. So there is a issue of whether this is the idea of tovling, is that a din d'oraisa, or whether that is a din d'rabbanan. So that's one issue. The Ramban says, even though the Gemara itself, when talking about the laws of Tevilas Kalim, at the very end of Masechus Avodah Zarah, quotes seemingly this pasuk. The Ramban suggests maybe a knight might not be quoting this pasuk, and in fact, maybe that's not even, and in fact, it might not be found in the Torah at all. The idea that a person that we have to tovel kalim, the Ramban suggests, is rabbinic. Now, it might have a basis in this pasuk. That's a concept called a smachta, that you could perhaps find a hint to it in the Torah, but it really is rabbinic in nature. The Rambam perhaps agrees with the Ramban, perhaps he doesn't. It's a little bit unclear what the Rambam feels about this. Other Rishonim assume that no, that this is actually being found in this pasuk. But there's still, so that's one question, whether this is a mitzvah d'oraisa or whether it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So, however, another question is this part of the kashering process? I mean, do you then have to bring to the mikvah in order to finish kashering? So the Torah to me has a question about this. He's like, I'm not really sure. If you look in the Gemara, you can't necessarily tell what's going on here. Levad ain't that perhaps the Hagala, perhaps the purging is not sufficient in order to get rid of all this stuff. And you have to actually sprinkle this stuff as well in order to kasher it from the Vela. And he says, or maybe it's just a separate halacha, that in order for it to be used, it has to be brought to the mikvah. He says, and there's plenty of nafkaminas, there's plenty of practical ramifications to that question, right? If, let's say, you cooked in it by accident, after you did Haggalah, after you purged it, but before you brought it to the mikvah, would you be able to eat that food? So he suggests, well, it depends what the purpose. Let's say if there's two steps here, there's kashering and then there's bringing it to the mikvah.
Yes.
So he says maybe bringing it to the mikvah might be part of the kashering process. I mean, it's not actually kosher until it's brought to the mikvah. That's his question.
He says, the first source, you said that it was clearly.
So he's going to point out why it's clear. We paskin that it's clearly separate. But just in order to understand the issues going on here, he says, what would be the ramifications of that? He says, well, let's say you kashered it, you brought it to the, you put it in the hot water, and then, but you didn't bring it to the mikveh yet, and then you cooked in it. Right? So is that food considered not kosher? Or is that food considered kosher, just was made in a vessel that wasn't yet toveled? So he says, I'm not sure. That's a question. Based on the Bavli. If you look at the Talmud Bavli, it never clearly defines that. He says, however, the Yerushalmi does. The Yerushalmi actually uses, he says, I found the Yerushalmi that explicitly says that Shalul Rebbe Yirmiya Amar Tzarech Tevila Y Lefi Sheyatsu Mitumas HaOved Kochavim Venichnas L'Kedushas Yisrael, because it leaves the tumah, it leaves the impurity of being a non-Jewish vessel and enters into the Kedusha of a Jewish vessel. That's a sort of like a gerus, a conversion that's going on, just as a person converts when they go to the mikvah. So too, we convert the kalim, which perhaps is ramifications for the idea of food, the way we view food as opposed to the way non-Jews view food, right? That we don't see, food is a way to sustain us as opposed to just simply something to enjoy, we do enjoy our food, but our ultimate goal with food is perhaps a perspective on it is a little different. In fact, there is a fascinating question that is out there of if a non-Jew converts, do they have to tovel all of their vessels as well?
Yeah.
A non-Jew converts, right, they go through a conversion process, and then they say, okay, now all of your vessels were owned by a non-Jew, right? And now they're owned by a Jew, right? So does the Jew have to go ahead and convert to and tovel all of those vessels? So we normally assume to do it, although there are perhaps reasons to say not to. In fact, the author of this, the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin, is an author. He's written on this topic. I actually called him up to ask him this question because I think I was working with a convert at that time. So they put in the front, you know, his address. They didn't put his phone number. So I at that time they had things called phone books. So I figured out what his phone number was, and I just called him up and asked him this question. He felt, yeah, I think you do. But he I remember his reaction was kind of like, oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, he does have it in the Sefer as like a one-liner, but it's actually a pretty long discussion as to whether we assume or not. It's a bit of a question, and therefore we would encourage them to sort of have a new vessel that you would make the bracha on, and everything else would be made without a blessing when they do so. But the conversion day is actually a pretty busy day, especially if the couple is, if there's a couple that's married, and they're both converting together, so not only do they convert, they potentially also get married that day. They don't necessarily have to, but they can't live in the same house anymore until they get married. So they also have to get married, and beyond that, they also have to tovel all their dishes that they want to eat. Wow. So it becomes a pretty. It could potentially be a pretty busy day. That day of conversion. Okay. So anyway. So our assumption is like that, Yerushalmi, that we're sort of the vessels are becoming Jewish over the course of as they go to the mikvah. So.
What about this couple on their wedding day getting all these wedding presents, and they get like 1,001 new dishes?
Yeah.
Do they have to also?
Oh, of course. That's why they have Sheva Brachos. So they spend all day going to the mikvah to take care of all their new vessels. Yeah, that's one of the first outings that a married couple often does, is that they take a walk down to the mikvah and tovel all the new vessels that they got. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
So
right. So just over the rest of the time, right, in this context, so what is the status of a vessel that has not been brought to the mikvah? Right. So what is that status?
If it's been kosher.
Yeah, it's a kosher fee. Either you bought it fresh, or or it's already been kosher. What is the status of that vessel? Okay, so there are those that suggest, there are Rishonim, and perhaps even the Rambam himself might say this, is that it's usher to use. That the kelim that the bring to the mikveh in a way permits it for use, and without that the extension of that is that food that is made in it would therefore be not kosher. It would be, right, that food that is quoted in Rishonim, the Rishonim to make that suggestion. So we don't assume that way. Rather, we assume like the Ramah. The Ramah in Siman Kuf Chaf, which is the section that the Tefillah in Yerodeya Kuf Chaf, which is the section where this is discussed, says, Aser li shtat, it's an interesting context. The context of somebody who borrows a vessel, right? If you borrow a kli from a non-Jew, it doesn't require a tefillah. But if a Yisrael purchased it from the non-Jew and he lends it to his friend, so the friend has to tovel it before he can use it, right? That's just going to be his responsibility. So, aval harishon aser li shtat l'sarchi suda, afilu derech harai, below tevila, that the first guy is prohibited to use it even for a meal. Even in like a happenstance type of way. I'm not sure what that would be. Without toveling first. Even though he didn't necessarily get it for the purpose of using it for food, so he's not permitted to use it until he. Until he brings it to the mikvah. So the implication of that Ramah is that you're not allowed to use it, but if you did use it, so the food is going to be, or the drink that was contained within it, is going to be kosher. So if you have a pot that wasn't toveled, and then you use the pot, and then you pour the pot in something else, so then the food is going to be okay. Using the pot, however, might be problematic. I mean, you're not allowed to continuously use it, but once the food is already made, so the food is then going to be kosher. There is a discussion that the Rama says afilu derech harai. So there is a myth. I actually gave a shir. I used to give a series in my shul called Halachic Mythbusters. So one of the myths out there is that you could use a vessel one time with before you bring it to the mikvah. That's like word on the street. So that's not true.
What? Wonder where that comes from.
Right. So where does that come from? So it might. So I suggest that perhaps it comes from this what about kalim that you only use one time? So for example, an aluminum pan. So aluminum pan is used for cooking, right? It's metal. So does that have to go to the mikveh before it's used? Right, so you buy stacks of aluminum pans at Amazing Savings or Costco or things like that. Before you use them, do you have to bring them all to the mikvah? So we assume there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe, Feinstein, to this effect, that he says no, that if it's something that's only used a few times, some people think that it's only one time. No, he actually says if you're only going to use it 3-4 times, so that's not considered a kli, that's not considered a vessel. A vessel means that it has to be some level of permanence. But if you use it knowing that I'm only going to use it a couple of times, so we don't consider that to be permanent, and therefore that doesn't require to be, that's not required to go to the mikvah. However, if something is going to be permanent, it has to be used, it has to be brought to the mikvah even before the first time you do it. Right? So that's the halacha that the...
I'm assuming an aluminum pan can only use it a couple times.
Disposable.
Those disposable pans that people have.
Okay. One you buy for Thanksgiving.
Right.
For Thanksgiving, right. For yeah. Shabbos, for Yom Tov, for right. So that's issue number one. So the food is actually going to be okay if it was made in it. Now, what about using a kli that wasn't brought to the mikvah? So we said you're not supposed to use it. Yeah. So what about the following issue? If you go to a hotel, you go to an inn, and they give you a drink. So it's non-Jewish owned. So it's a non-Jewish owned kli. You don't have to worry about that. Let's say it's a Jewish owned place, but you suspect that they didn't bring it to the mikvah. I don't know which hotels. I think Hilton is Jewish. I don't know. Now it's probably a corporation. But Hilton, yeah. There is a person named Hilton who I believe was Jewish.
Oh, yeah. There was, yeah.
Yes, I forget if he was related or if he specifically wasn't related. I think he wasn't related. My shul in Phoenix, we had a speaker come like 1 year around. He was a survivor who I think named himself Hilton when he got to America to be, or his father named him Hilton. So he actually spoke at our shul and he was like great. He spoke. He was beautiful. You know, spoke very nicely and was clearly aware. And like within 2 months, he passed away. He got his story out and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so can one use those kalim? Right, so this is perhaps more of an issue like in Europe, in the shtetls, where people went from place to place and there were inns that they stayed in. Perhaps it was Jewish owned, wasn't religiously owned, so could they use it or not? So there is a tshuva from the Darkei Tshuva. The Darkei Tshuva was not really the first Munkacha Rebbe, but of the current era of Munkacha Rebbes was the first Munkacha Rebbe.
When was this?
He passed away in, I think, 1908. I think okay. That was the year. I just gave a shiur recently about the Munkacher, about his grandson, who was a Munkacher Rebbe during the war. It's a fascinating story. You could catch it on YU Torah. Excellent. I'm not sure. That's like delivery. I don't know about delivery, but the story is really a phenomenal story. But anyways, so the Darkei Tshuva says that no, you could actually drink from that. Not but the reason he gives is because there are some who suggest that if it's like a sort of a commercial type of vessel, it's not included in the mitzvah. That is commercially, it's sort of like not yours. It's sort of like part of the business. It's part of the business. Some suggest that you wouldn't need to tovel it. There are some leniencies that we employ actually in the current commercial kashrus market based on that principle. That perhaps that's a reason to be lenient. We don't assume that way, meaning a non-kosher business, a Jewish-owned business, does. We do encourage, we do say they have to total their kalim, but perhaps there are some leniencies that are out there that sometimes could be partly justified based on that reason. But
let me ask this. Do all of the questions and pertaining scenarios to the questions that are coming up here assume that nobody is going to an establishment owned by non-Jews? So
Why?
Because then they're not.
Oh, if it's non-Jewish, okay. That's not a word, right? The assumption here is that it's a Jewish-owned place.
It's a Jewish.
Then you have a question. So can I use the vessels even if they haven't been totaled? So answer one. So we were in that scenario. So I think we rely on this Darkei Tshuva that seems to say that it's okay. But perhaps the more common question is that you're going to your non-religious, you know, somebody who doesn't non-religious relative who never totaled their kelim, right? Or you go to your neighbor and they want to give you a cup of water. So and the neighbor's Jewish, but they. Assume that they were never tovel their kelim. Can one drink from that from that water? So the simple answer is no. The simple answer is that it, all things being equal, that there is we should say not to. Rav Moshe seems to assume that one should not. He's a shuvah where he says you shouldn't. He has a little discussion here. I have an entire book here called Tfilas Kalim, so we put together with very thick footnotes and everything. There he assumes that that is problematic. He does, however, quote from the Shail Shuvah's Beis Avi. Don't know who that is, but he says that he's Mekel when you're a guest someplace else. Why? He says because you're not really borrowing the Kli at that time point. Meaning what the Shulchan Aruch said is that you're not allowed to borrow, if you borrow Kli from a Jew, it hasn't been tovled yet, so it's your responsibility to tovel it. He says, yeah, but you're not really borrowing the kli. This is just the way of him getting the water into your mouth. Mm-hmm. So for that, based on that principle, he says one maybe has the right to be lenient. Okay, so there maybe is room to be lenient. However, we attempt to be, we try to be machmir. However, often these situations often then sort of bounce into the area of, you know, kavod abrios and not embarrassing people and things like that. So we're often looking for kulas. We're often looking for leniencies in this case in order to absolve people of embarrassment. So this child's tshuva's beis avi is a good thing to have in your back pocket when these questions come up. Nevertheless, we, like in my shul, we never did it somewhat based on this reason, but there are shuls who put out, especially shuls that have a diverse membership, so they put out community kashrus policies. Because not... they say, you know, whether a person keeps kosher in their own house is their own decision. We're not, you know, we encourage everybody to do it, but we're not going to, you know, we're not going to people's houses. But we often get the questions of, can I eat in this other person's house? So we want to just put out, this is the community kashrus policy, and therefore, and then there's a simple answer, right? Well, you could just ask the person, do you keep the community kashrus policy? And the answer is yes or no, and there's nothing to be embarrassed about. The person has to be honest honest about that. So one of the questions when people are trying to make this policy is this tefillas kelim issue. Are we going to be strict and demand for a person to follow, to say that they're following the community kashrus policy, do we have to assume that they're kelim are tovel? So presumably the answer should be yes. That's what it's seems like that in terms of a policy, the answer should be yes, even though perhaps one could find leniencies even in an individual situation when the answer might be no.
The answer should be yes. When
if one is going to pump one of these policies out and in order to say, oh yeah, this person's house is okay to eat in, so the assumption should be that they've tovled their kalim.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Even though if a person is in their house already and they say, oh gosh, what do I do now? Right? So maybe there's room to be lenient, but as a policy matter, I don't think we should be putting out that leniency as a policy. Right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right. And then a couple of other issues along these lines. All right, so what is the...
Is it ever, like, this, I'm saying this kind of jokingly, but not really, is it ever permissible to make it down to, like, how thirsty you are, you know what I mean? Like... how hungry you are.
Yeah, I mean, that might be part of the tzorach, meaning you're in a person's house and the person says, can I give you a cup of water? No thanks. Right? But now you're really thirsty. Yeah. So then there is maybe room that could be part of the need that person might have. One other thing along these lines is how do we define the mitzvah? So the mitzvah seems to be, and as well as the prohibition. So the mitzvah seems to be that there's a mitzvah to total your kelim. Right, not necessarily it permits the food in it, that might be what these other Rishonim hold, but the way that the Ramah is formulated is that there's a mitzvah to tovel one's kelim, and in order to make sure people do the mitzvah, we say you can't use the vessel until you tovel the kelim. That seems to be. So even if you assume that there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to do it, the prohibition of using food from it is only going to be rabbinic in nature and sort of set up as a knas, or set up as a... So one of the questions that come up with tovel and kelim nowadays is, okay, what about like electric kelim, things like that, where we're afraid it's going to be ruined. So with that, the answer sort of, we have like these urns and things like that. So that the answer sort of became, they don't get ruined. That even if there is something like a plug-in urn, so if you put it into the thing and you take it out, let it dry for a few days before you use it, so they will not get ruined. That's from some experience. But the bigger question now is, okay, what about these types of vessels that actually have like computer chips in it? Those probably will get ruined, such as like a Keurig machine. Things like that. Well, like the coffee, the Keurig machines. Things like that. Or the more modern urns that actually have computer chips and temperature controls and things like that. So they probably will get ruined. So what's the story? So when a friend of mine actually married Rav Schachter's daughter. So when my Rebbe, so he married his, so I bought him for his wedding, I bought him a George Foreman grill. I was, obviously, I was still he was a couple years older than me, so I was like a younger kid at the time. I was like, alright, that seems like a good gift. Yeah. So I bought him a Foreman grill. And I asked him, he said, so when you ask your father-in-law what you do with this grill in terms of Tefillas Kelim, just let me know what the answer is, as I'm curious. So he said that Rav Schachter employed this logic, and says, well, the mitzvah is to do it. Now, if it's impossible to do it because it's going to ruin the vessel, so then the mitzvah falls away. If the mitzvah falls away, that means that the knas falls away, the fine, the limitation on using it until it gets reused, so that falls away as well. So if that's the case, then you can use it without bringing it to the... If you think it's going to be... If it's not going to work, so then you could use it without bringing it to the mikveh.
Things have detachable parts, though, that can be...
Yes and no. Some do, some don't. If there are detachable parts, then you would bring the metal part that touches the food. Right. But sometimes they don't. If you try taking, I think, a form and you take it apart, it's not going to be so easy to put that together. And some of it is also subjective. So I used to tell people, tell people when it's the simple electric kelim, you could bring it to the mikveh, not a problem. We recently got one of these kumkum things, like a metal urn that just fits on it, right? So even though there's an electric part to it, put it in the mikveh, right? It wasn't an issue. I think when I was in Phoenix, the Rosh Kollel promised to refund anybody's money who brought to the mikveh and it got broke. He said, it's fine, I'll refund the money if it's a problem. But there were people that were nervous. I had a member who was particularly neurotic about this. He said, no, I insist, I think it's going to break, I think it's dangerous, you're going to wreck electricity for the entire neighborhood. And it's like, okay, fine. So if you really think that it's dangerous to use, so that could, there is a subjective perspective to it as well, that he could also therefore use the same logic to be exempt himself as well from being to the mikvah. There's a whole other story here about bringing things to the mikvah on Shabbos, but I guess we'll have to save that for another. Okay, have a good day.
Yeah.
Happy, yeah. Quick question.